to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurb. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority, where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout. It's the Minority Corner Rewind. Each Tuesday, we will have a bonus episode of Minority Corner, digging into the archives and selecting a corner that is appropriate to revisit for the moment. You know, with so many new listeners who've joined in the past week or so. And you know what? Honestly, even for some of the veteran corner kids, we've had around 400 corners. And sometimes it can feel like cramming for an exam as you're getting all this information in. So let's revisit some of this. And for some of you, it'll be brand spanking new. And you know, honestly, the best line of defense in the war against systemic racism is going to be knowledge and information. Knowledge is power, as they do say. It's going to be able to arm us with the systemic, you know, what are the causes of everything? We're experiencing the symptoms of systemic racism, but where did this all come from? As we said, nothing happened in a vacuum. So the more that we hear these stories and understand this, it's going to better arm us for moving forward and enacting policies and knowing what it is that we are fighting against and fighting for. So on our last episode, Bruce walked us through the history of police in America, and we began talking about HBO's The Watchmen and the graphic novel, and specifically about the HBO series. We then started talking about Tulsa, which reminded me of Minority Corner co-creator Ed Neke's wonderful corner a few years ago on the Tulsa Greenwood Massacre. And with everything that's going on, it just seems so fitting to revisit the story of Greenwood. Who were the people that made up this black town of Greenwood, also dubbed as Black Wall Street? And what caused or started what would ultimately be the massacre and destruction of this town at the hands of white supremacists? For some of you, you've never heard of this before, so it's going to be brand jaw-dropping information, or maybe you've just heard snippets. And, well, there's a reason why this was not taught in history class, and we discuss that. So strap in as we look at the microcosm of what happens when a town of black people get too successful. And stick around at the very end, we'll debrief, and also we will give a shout out to our tweet and review of the week. It's time to learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner Rewind.
This is my corner.
It's your corner.
Yeah, Jennifer Hudson.
Hey. Have a good corner, Neke.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about, I was wrong at the beginning, the Tulsa race riots, or what I like to call the Greenwood Massacre.
There it is. What I like is that you corrected yourself before you wrecked yourself.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's true. I don't want people getting the wrong idea.
Because they'll come at you.
They're coming.
And they'll be like,
me.
Hey, you said that wrong. You're like, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Y'all are sweet. Well, so what is this about? I don't really know anything about this.
Okay, so we're going to go on a journey. Ooh. Because a lot of the articles that I read, I was inspired by, actually, Andrew, my husband, sent this to me. And also, I did some more research, and I found some stuff on Ebony online, and also there's a good Wikipedia page about it. I'm not basing it only on Wikipedia, just for a good note to everybody. I have several sources.
Listen, librarian, you've got the receipts. I know you know how to do your research, so I know.
Okay, so we're going to go through some history first. Okay. So when Tulsa became a booming town in the United States, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Thank you, because I was like, I don't know where this is.
It's in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Okay, so it was, people kind of considered it two separate cities because it was segregated. So the white residents of Tulsa, they referred to the area north of the Frisco Railroad tracks as Little Africa.
Oh, Lord. Huh. Already.
I know.
Okay. Here we are. All right. I'm sorry. Continue.
Okay. This community later acquired the name Greenwood by the black residents, okay? So in 1921, it was about home to about 10,000 black residents. And Greenwood was the center on a street known as Greenwood Avenue. So, you know, original name.
Mm-hmm. Where it came from. Yeah.
This street was important because it ran north over a mile from the Frisco Railroad yards, and it was one of the few streets that did not cross through both black and white neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So Greenwood was purely only the black neighborhood of Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
So around the start of the 20th century, so how did all these black people get to this section
of they get
Tulsa?
There?
So basically, let's go to a couple of people who started it.
Okay.
This one man, O.W. Gurley. He was a wealthy black landowner from Arkansas, and he traveled the United States to participate in the Oklahoma Land Run of 1889.
Okay.
So Oklahoma Land Run was racist, where they basically kicked all the Native Americans off of land, and then they were like, hey, anybody who wants this land, go get it, grab it, take it, and then you become owner of it. I think I mentioned this back a couple episodes ago when Martin Luther King gave the thing where a bunch of white settlers were able to get free land.
Yeah. Oh, that's
meanwhile,
right.
This is right after slavery, so black people didn't have nothing.
Yeah.
So this man, O.W. Gurley, in 1889 was like, fuck that shit.
Yeah.
He was already well-to-do. He was an entrepreneur.
Wow.
And he had just resigned from a presidential appointment under Grover Cleveland.
Really?
Yeah. And so he was like, I'm going to strike out on my own.
Yeah.
So in 1906, Gurley moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where he purchased 40 acres of land.
He got his 40 acres.
He got his 40 acres. And guess this?
What?
He was like, this shit's only going to be sold to color people.
He gets all the snaps. All the snaps.
Right? Because black ownership was unheard of at the time. So he's like, I'm getting my own, but I'm also going to give it to my people as well.
I almost just want to cry of like, just like that, to have that, like, you are so boss ass in that time period to be able to have that momentum, that energy, and the tenacity.
Right.
And to say, me too, I'm going to have this and for my people.
Exactly.
Fucking amazing.
Amazing. So here's another story. Another black American entrepreneur, J.B. Stratford.
Mm-hmm.
He arrived in Tulsa in 1899. He believed that black people had a better chance of economic progress if they pooled their resources and worked together, which is true.
It's true. Till this day.
I know. Still true. So true. Shop at black-owned businesses. He bought large tracts of real estate in the northeastern part of Tulsa, which he subdivided and also sold exclusively to black folks. So these people are like setting it up. So word started spreading around.
Yeah.
And black Americans who traveled to Oklahoma, they were like, okay, why? Let's go to Oklahoma. This is promised land.
Yeah.
They were able to trace ancestors back to Oklahoma. Like, a lot of them were, they had traveled by foot.
Yeah.
By cart.
Wow.
By horses.
However they could.
They traveled by traveled on foot with the five civilized tribes, so Native Americans helped them get there.
Wow.
They also traveled along the Trail of Tears, which is depressing, but they traveled there to get there.
Yeah.
They were also, many of the black people were descendants of Creeks, Seminoles, and the Yuchi tribe, so they were definitely, a lot of black people were returning home.
Right, yeah.
So then oil struck.
Ah, oh, fuck.
Black, no.
Okay, this is a good thing.
This is good.
Okay.
Black gold.
Oh.
So the oil boom in the 1910s, the teens, northeastern version area of Oklahoma around Tulsa flourished.
Wow.
Including Greenwood neighborhood. And it became so wealthy, it was known as the Negro Wall Street or Black Wall Street.
Oh my God, I want to go to there.
Yeah. So the area was home to several prominent black businessmen. Not only did black Americans want to contribute to the success.
It's a hard word.
Ugh, too many S's and C's.
Why do we need all those S's and C's in there? Calm that down.
They did good.
Yeah. they did a good job.
Of their own shops, there was also the racial segregation laws. So they had no other option but to shop in Greenwood with their own people. But they were supporting each other.
Right.
There was oil boom, wealthy area.
Yeah.
So Detroit Avenue along the edge of Sandpipe Hill contained a number of expensive houses that belonged to doctors, lawyers, and business owners.
Ooh.
The buildings on Greenwood Ave housed offices of almost all of Tulsa's black lawyers, realtors, doctors, and other professionals.
This is amazing. This sounds like a black utopia.
Right? There were 15 well-known black American physicians, one of whom was Dr. A.C. Jackson.
Okay.
Now,
nasty.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Jackson was considered the most able Negro surgeon in America.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm.
Damn right.
Okay, so at the same time,
okay,
Ku Klux Klan started
popping up. Oh, fuck. Here it goes.
Yeah.
Here we are.
So in northeastern Oklahoma, there the Ku Klux Klan started to pop up and there was racial and political tension.
Mm-hmm.
So in about 1921,
yeah,
there were about 3,200 members of the Klan in Tulsa.
Damn. Yeah.
Okay. You ready?
I'm not, but okay, just give it to me because I need to know. We need to know this.
So that I've set the scene.
You've set the scene. I know exactly. I feel like I'm magically transported back to there.
Yes.
And I am just waiting to see what happens next.
Okay. So the madness all started in March 31st, 1921, when a 17-year-old white girl named Sarah Page accused a 19-year-old black man, Dick Rollins, of assaulting her. Allegedly.
Right, allegedly. Alleged, her word. This is...
And she was an elevator operator and he was a shoe shiner.
Okay. They worked at the same building
probably,
or something?
I don't
okay.
know. Right. So that one event, that's it. The word of one 17-year-old white woman against the word of one 19-year-old black shoe shiner.
Yeah.
Okay, so that gave local mobs of white men acting as police cause to invade the community on March 31st, 1921. This assault was met by a bunch of armed community members to defend their home. Some were black World War I veterans. Mm. So they defended the country, and now they have to defend their home from other Americans.
Damn.
This is why I don't call it a riot. Because nobody was, this was brutal. This was brutal.
Yeah.
So during the night and day of the riot, deputized whites killed more than 300 black people.
This is insane.
300.
And this is also like, these are American citizens.
Right.
These are like, that's the end of the sentence. Like, it's like, imagine like folks just coming into your town and city and just slaughtering your community and your people.
300. It gets worse. They looted and burned to the ground 40 square blocks of 1,265 African-American homes, including hospitals, schools, and churches, and destroyed 150 businesses. The city of Tulsa conspired with the mob, arresting more than 6,000 black residents and refusing to provide assistance. Law enforcement dropped firebombs on buildings, homes, and fleeing families, stating that they were protecting against the Negro uprising, and estimated that 10,000 people were left homeless. Remember when I said in 1921 that there were 10,000 black people in Greenwood?
Yep.
Literally everyone who lived there was left homeless.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back into the personal stories.
Yeah.
So O.G. Gurley?
Yeah.
Remember him?
Yeah.
He lost everything. During the race riots, the Gurley Hotel, the street's first commercial enterprise, valued at $55,000, was lost, along with the Brunswick Billard Parlor, the Doc Eastman Hughes Cafe. Gurley also owned a two-story building. It housed Carter's Barbershop, Hardy Rooms, a pool hall, and a cigar store. All were reduced to ruins by his account and court records. He lost nearly $200,000 in the 1921 massacre. I'm not calling it a riot.
Well, it's so interesting. It's like, who gets to tell history, right? And gets to report on it. Because, I mean, there's nothing about a riot about this. These
right.
people were literally, it was a massacre. They went in. I think it's even like, I don't know, like, what do you call it when there's people that go into your town and...
A mob. It's destruction. They can't handle the fact that black people were wealthy.
That's what it literally comes down to, and it's so interesting because it's like,
mm-hmm.
I think this is the prime example because I was literally thinking about, you know, like, this sounds like a black utopia, and I think a lot of communities do really well by keeping their money within their communities, and they
right.
shop at their local businesses. I feel like this is the reason why
mm-hmm.
black communities aren't able to thrive. It was
right.
shut down
immediately.
And we that lesson, it's there. It was like a message was sent in the
yeah.
black community as like, our communities aren't thriving as much as
right.
others. We lose our neighborhoods. We don't
right.
own our neighborhoods as much. We don't own
right.
our own wealth. We don't keep the money within our own community. And
one accusation by a 17-year-old girl leads to 300 people losing their lives and everyone becoming homeless in all the buildings. Anyway, so remember A.B. Jackson?
Yeah.
Dr. Jackson, the most capable black surgeon?
Yeah.
He was shot to death. He left his house during the unrest and somebody shot him. So this massacre was omitted from state and local records and is rarely mentioned in history books, classrooms, or even in private.
I've never heard about this ever.
This is destruction at the highest level. If this were to happen right now, can you imagine?
Yeah.
This is disgusting. When I heard this story, I could not believe it.
I mean, it goes back to, like, what you're saying is, like, I mean, they could not stand that these black communities, again, like, this a group of people that were brought here from, stolen from their homes.
Stolen.
For generations. Mm-hmm. And look how fucking successful the system was.
Able
not
to do something.
To just make a new for their lives. And weren't bothering anybody, had their own communities, their own place, and they couldn't handle someone being successful. It's the same thing, like, how, like, people today still could not stand that there was a black man in the White House.
Right.
Can't stand seeing a beautiful black family be beautiful, amazing, brilliant.
Right. We firebombed the White House. That's what happened. Yeah. America couldn't handle it, so they firebombed the White House, just
it
like how they firebombed
burned it down. They're like, burn this shit down.
Get Trump in there. Burn it down.
Yeah.
So here's the aftermath. I can't just leave off on that note.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yay.
So the community mobilized its resources and rebuilt Greenwood in 5 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The resilience.
I know. Can you imagine that? So once they rebuilt it, throughout the 20s, it was a hotbed of jazz and blues.
Beautiful.
They persevered. Unfortunately, the neighborhood fell to economic and population drain of the 1960s.
Okay.
But there, and much of the area was leveled during urban renewal in the 1970s to make way for a highway loop around the downtown district revitalization.
Not an accident. They're like, where are we going to put this highway? Oh, where this black community is. Sorry, you got to go. Highway.
Been waiting for it. Yep. As they've been probably sucking resources from them to get them into the economic and population drain.
Yep.
So revitalization and preservation efforts in the 1990s and 2000s resulted in tourism initiatives and memorials. And today.
Yes.
So John Hope Franklin Greenwood Reconciliation Park and the Greenwood Cultural Center honor the victims of the Tulsa Race Riot, or the Greenwood Massacre, as I'm redubbing it.
Mm-hmm.
Although the Greenwood Chamber of Commerce plans a larger museum to be built with the participation of the National Park Service.
Wow.
So if you live in Oklahoma, I say go visit Greenwood. Support that district. Go to the museums. Go support, because these stories need to be told. These are the things that we need to remind America, that if something in 1921 happened where you can firebomb a whole community and leave 10,000 people without homes and 300 people without their lives, and then take it off the books and nobody gives a fuck about it, then we are not living in a proper society. Because that was not that long ago in the grand scheme of things.
No, that was supposed to be like the roaring 20s.
It was
supposed to be, and the fact that that happened there.
This is why whenever somebody's like, ooh, the 20s are fun, I'm like,
go fuck yourself.
No.
You're like, and here's a little pamphlet.
Right.
About this massacre that happened that no one talks about.
Exactly. So I am bringing that. I want everybody to be aware of the history of America, aware of what happened, aware of when black people tried to do something for themselves, what happened, and how it's all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
The word of a 17-year-old white girl. 17 is a girl. And I'm not discrediting her. It could even have happened. This guy could have assaulted her. It probably didn't. But even if he did, this didn't need to be the result of it.
It doesn't give permission to essentially massacre, like the slaughtering of an entire community.
They were slaughtered.
It was unwarranted in that sense.
Exactly. 300 people lost their lives.
And, you know, it's interesting because that time period is Birth of a Nation had just come out, I think 1918,
right?
I believe. And it literally depicts this story and this fear and this phobia. And again, what happens when fear and phobia take over? Just to go back to my plane ride experience.
Yes.
I did not allow the fear and phobia to, like, I could have, like, rallied an entire plane ride against him, you know?
Right. And I'm sure it would have happened with the right fear-minded person in there.
Can't let the fear take over. Fear can sit there, but it doesn't to let it, you know, take over in that sense.
So this
should be explored more in Black History Month as well.
Right.
Because I think, like, thank you for providing me more of the history of my people and my community.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, even Black History Month, like, it can't just be, like, you know, Martin Luther King and
Rosa Parks.
And Rosa Parks.
They're great, but let's explore more avenues.
Talk more about the ugly things that have happened. And the perseverance is the thing that I take away most of this story, is how Black people continue to persevere. And I say this, we are a beautiful, magical people.
We are. In order to 5 years bounce back from that bullshit.
Amazing.
Also, I just want to really emphasize that, yes, this is a Black community and this happened to Black people, but it's American history. And if you are white, if you're Asian, if you are Latinx, if you are American, this is your history.
Yeah.
This happened on American soil by American people to American people.
This is your story,
this
too.
This is your story. If you consider yourself American, this is your story.
And wear that travesty, you know, mm-hmm. wear it with you to continue pushing forward and moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing forward and moving forward. You're just going forward. Yeah. Go forward with your bad self.
Should we go forward to your corner?
Go forward over to my corner. It sounds like a forward email, but forward it over to me.
They are lucky that all Black people want is equality and not revenge. That's a powerful quote from the author Kimberly L. Jones, who gave an impassioned speech. We'll link that in the show notes. She gave an impassioned speech that just really seemed incredibly fitting to the story of Tulsa Greenwood. You know, with all that we've been through and experienced at the hands of white folks, all Black people really want is peace, equity, and equality. And that's really not asking for much. Not revenge, just equality. And just looking at the story of Tulsa, just seeing how it all started because of the accusation of a white girl, 17 years old. And we see other times in history where accusations from white women have led to the death and destruction of Black bodies. You know, Emmett Till comes to mind. And even recently what happened with Christian Cooper when he was birdwatching in Central Park and a white woman threatened to call the police and say an African-American man was attacking her while he simply asked her to leash her dog. And those who don't learn from their history are doomed to repeat it. This is why my heart was so broken and so many Black folks around the country, when they heard the story about what happened to Christian Cooper, you know, that story, it triggers the past because we know that this could have turned out so differently for him because history has shown us that. And in an alternate timeline, which I do believe in alternate universes, you know, things didn't end up so well for Christian Cooper, as in he just shot and killed by the police. In an alternate universe, maybe we're taking to the streets to demand justice for Christian Cooper. That breaks my heart, and I am grateful that in this timeline, in this universe, that is not the case for him. You know, we also see in the story of Tulsa the history of police. You know, it was mentioned, Aneke mentioned, that white folks showed up acting as the police. So again, the history of police is rooted in violence towards Black people, controlling the bodies of Black people. I don't know if you saw this week's John Oliver, but he cites a quote from a post-Civil War era Alabama planter that was in, and this was included in Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow. And he said, in referring to the police, this guy said that we have the power to pass stringent laws to govern Negroes. This is a blessing, for they must be controlled in some way or white people cannot live among them. That is the history of the police. And that is why we need mass reforming, restructuring of this institution, that they are not, police are not meant to be warriors against their own people, but they are supposed to be protectors, civil servants and protectors of their people. And that's not the structures that are in place across most America. And I will tell you, that's not how Black people feel. They do not feel that police are protectors of them in the least bit. So also, just to debunk something, there's a lot of talk about what defunding, you know, the police means. It means different things on different levels, but it definitely means, in a lot of cases, they're overly funded. In some cities, a third of their budget goes towards the police. We'll be talking about this in greater detail this coming week for the new episode of Minority Corner happening on Friday. We are going to dive in to Campaign Zero, which is essentially 10 points and 10 initiatives towards reforming our police structures. And it's all based on data, or policies that are either already in place in different parts here in the U.S. or around the world. And so we're going to break those down because it's also important. We talk about, you know, getting rid of a system or abolishing a system, but we also want to put in, what are we fighting for? What do we want to put in place of it? So that's going to happen this coming week on Minority Corner. So if you haven't watched The Watchmen, definitely go watch it. It is so apropos, frighteningly so, of just everything that's going on. It's a beautiful history lesson, and it's comic book nerdy, but just the best that comic books and sci-fi and nerdiness has to offer, and also touching on issues of generational trauma and going into Black history. But Black history is American history, and so we need to know our history. We need to know where we came from, the blood that we stand upon on this nation. So when we rebuild, like, we don't want to rebuild, our house is built on sand. We need to uproot everything. The roots are rotten. We need new, all the things, new remodeling. Bless this house. Okay, we had a slew of reviews come in. Y'all, so grateful for the wonderful reviews that are coming in. Just really grateful for all the folks that are finding the podcast. And it just, it warms our heart to see these. This one comes from IFFoyd91, and it reads, "This is another powerful tool in the toolbox for spreading knowledge and insight that as a cis white male, I don't have. I'm so grateful to be able to have the opportunity to learn from this podcast and others like it. Please continue to do what you do. Much love and respect." Wow. Very thankful. Oh, and that's 5 stars, and he wrote powerful at the very top of it. So really appreciate that. Welcome to the corner, to the fight, to the journey. We're in this together. Really appreciate that wonderful review. So you can also write a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps for people to find our show. The more ratings, the more reviews. It also just is a nice little, it warms my heart. So if you haven't written a review, please do. Then over on Twitter, we have this one from @RosieGolden19, wrote, "The most recent podcast of the Minority Corner is making me giggle during this hard time. Definitely a podcast worth checking out for intersectional excellence, news, history, and obviously laughs." Really appreciate that as well. That's what we're here to do. Information and laughs. It's just sometimes if you're not, if we're not laughing, we're also just crying all the time. And laughter can be a healing way to, gotta laugh so we can heal. And if you would also like to get involved in the conversation, you can tweet at us at Minority Corner. I am also at @JamesArthur_M. And you can find Aneke at @MitzFitzy. You can tweet at her as well. I have to be honest, Twitter is not my forte. I'm trying to keep up in the conversations over there. A better place to get involved in the conversation is on Facebook at the Minority Corner Kids Playground. A lot of great conversations. You can go more in depth. And Twitter is only a few characters. But in the Corner Kids Playground, we can go more in depth into these conversations, these ideas. You can share things. I think it's just a better place to have deeper conversations. And that's the Minority Corner Rewind. It's our first one. Hope to keep doing these. If you are a veteran listener, let us know. Oh, you can also email us at minoritycorner@gmail.com. But I was going to say, let us know if there are episodes that you think that we should, corners specifically, that you think that we should re-release, revisit, talk about in further detail. Let us know, veterans. And you can email us as well. You can also ask us anything, any questions or anything like that, or we can just go further into conversations. And there we have it. I hope you all have a beautiful, wonderful rest of your week. And as Audre Lorde says, revolution is not a one-time event. Thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.